We often talk about reboots on this show.
Changing up everything in TV,
rebooting it.
We're doing a little bit of that with our own show here.
This is more of an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. mid-season revamp, really.
Yeah.
Mid-season after, what, 6 years or something?
We've been doing this for a while. Yeah, about like 5 years.
It was like five?
Also, I want to go back. I don't want to compare us to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at any point.
Don't insult us this way.
About, like Buffy. It's Buffy season two. We were good from the start.
Yeah.
Just trying to get a little bit better.
So we are changing up the format a little bit. There were certain things that were gained from the shift in the format to having individual shows be individual podcasts. But there's also a little bit lost in that.
Lost.
He wasn't even being lost enough
when we were very specific.
Yeah, he wasn't even being ironic when he used that term.
But, you know, change was inevitable. We were coming down to the wire. We knew that we needed to do it. We wrangled in some terriers.
I was wondering how you're going to work that one. That was just blatant.
I was waiting for it was a bad break.
Yeah. We're a bunch of mad men in this room.
It's terrible.
We decided to go back to our three-part podcast. So we're going to have our news segment, and then we're going to talk about some individual TV shows, and then we'd move on to our general forum thing in the second, in the third half. We'd have all this kind of mapped out on the site so everyone can see it.
Yes.
And we're hoping that it'll be a little bit more of a something for everyone, a potpourri of a show, I guess.
A melange of television taste.
Oh. A goulash, if you will.
A goulash.
A gluten-free sandwich.
Oh. Well, I don't know how we're selling
to get everybody
anymore.
In on this.
Yeah. We're gluten-free, we're vegetarian, we're full of meat. We're dessert and a floor wax.
This sounds disgusting. I'm out. I think everyone just tuned out. But let's go ahead and go around the room. I'm Grant Davis, first off. And with me is...
I am Randy Lander.
Randy, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the new podcast.
Welcome to the new podcast.
The TV dude's rebooted, I guess, or whatever we're going to call it.
That's strange.
We'll have to come up with some other
name. So my name is Gregory Julian Amani Smith, and I'm a cancer.
Is it Julian?
Yes, I've got four names.
Gregory, I know. Julian, you couldn't just Amani pick one. Smith. You're very indecisive.
I never knew what the J stood for.
J. J is for Julian, yes.
I thought I meant jazz guy.
Jazz.
And finally...
Johnny Neal. I goof on Greg and nobody else.
That's okay.
So,
it's because he loves me. I never get goofed on.
No, Randy never gets goofed on, ever.
True. Randy doesn't get a hard time.
No, not at all.
He had cancer once, so we feel like we're not allowed to.
Once? Oh! I mean, how many get well cards I bought for this guy?
Ouch.
Hey! I haven't gotten any of those.
Hey,
he bought them for me, but he gave them to somebody else.
He just keeps them.
He's like, oh, he got well. He didn't need this card.
So, for our first episode, we do not have any listener email that we would be answering, but we would like to say that if you guys would like to send us some email, have any questions about TV you want answered on the show, send it to mail@thetvdudes.com. And while we're on that subject of housekeeping, I guess,
yes,
you guys can also go to iTunes and go to the TV Dudes. And give us a 5-star rating and write a little review for us. I think we're going to try and focus on building that back up a little bit.
Yeah.
Say that we're awesome because we are.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and move into some news stories. We've got a bunch of TV news here. AMC is ordering a new pilot for a Walking Dead companion drama.
Mm. I want to talk about that. That was the executive's easiest decision. Deciding what to have for lunch that day was harder than that.
No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's see. Do I want another show that's just like our highest rated by a mile show? Yes, I do. And what do I want for lunch?
And how easy, right?
Like, yeah.
He's already got the crew, the makeup, the zombie suits.
The world is established. What they're looking for is that they're going to have... It'd be another group in another location entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually, at least for the time being, intend any sort of crossover or anything.
It should be like a fraternity. You know? And like they don't realize that it's a zombie apocalypse outside. They're still yo, don't bite me, bro.
But I feel like you're supposed to root for them against the zombies. I can't imagine doing that in that situation.
Well, they're
okay. A sorority.
They've actually done a show. There's a show on. I think it's come on Sci-Fi about somebody filming a zombie movie and the behind the scenes of filming a zombie movie, where it's like Zombie Town or something like that. It's either on Sci-Fi or
Zombies actually break out while they're filming?
No,
would be Dead Set, I believe.
Dead Set was this little BBC miniseries, like six episodes, and they're. It's like what I think is actually during the filming of their Big Brother program over there, and zombies just suddenly start coming and invading.
Oh, so they weren't
everything.
Making a zombie show, and then
was there a zombie show?
It was Big Brother, like the actual That's British funny. Big Brother. It's on the set of Big Brother, and a zombie outbreak happens, and so it's the people who are in the Big Brother house and some of the producers. It's a British miniseries called The Dead Set, and it's
so good.
It's not a you have to get like region free DVDs to get it. Mm-hmm. But it's so good. It's one of my favorite Dead zombie set. Things.
Or there's outlets online.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. No, neither do I.
Wow. I'd like to see The Talking Dead have a spinoff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, because. I think it probably will. to go with the companion series, we're like, hey, it's Chris Hardwick. I found another place I could talk on TV, and they let me talk.
Hey.
Yeah.
a little put our future hats mm-hmm. on here. Do you guys think this will be as big a success?
I lost interest in Walking Dead.
I kind of don't care. I'll wait to come back. But I don't know.
I mean,
I think it's probably a low investment.
Yeah.
You know, low investment on return.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like how in the 60s and the 50s there were all those Westerns on TV. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Finally, yeah. You know, there were just one too many Westerns.
I'm most interested in them getting a different it's the constant game of showrunners for them.
Right. Yeah.
But just get someone else with a different vision that and maybe they're not going to be so stuck with like what was already established or having to follow whatever Robert Kirkman dangles in front of them and forces them to follow his plot line.
Maybe, but I feel like Kirkman's so deeply involved that it's still going to be him. I'd love that because I agree with you. I think that the show could use a fresher voice.
At a certain point, I don't think like he has the time to keep having his input on all the storylines for everything. I mean, he might have an opinion, but it's probably like he has to agree to some extent that it's outside of his hand.
And the thing is, are they going to film this somewhere else? Or are they going to film it Georgia for something else? You know?
Yeah, they're going to film in the forest and be like, this is the forest of
Endor.
I would hope Endor. They would go urban.
They're going really
That's
weird.
Right.
Urban. I would like urban too.
I would rather go urban. I mean, just be in the woods again.
I kind of want some like Attack the Block type vibe.
Yeah.
Where you got these street kids that all of a sudden are faced with this and they have to like take their gang to a little bit more. Okay. I say that and I remember the third episode or fourth episode with a gang.
Yeah, you don't want that.
The gang that protects the old folks home. Yeah. And you're like,
not at all.
Those with a heart.
That's terrifying. That's terrible.
You know, but that I would like to see if they're going to do some zombie thing, I would like it to be a little bit hopeful. You know, I mean, that's what kind of wore me out on there. Mm-hmm.
There's
no hope. Well, there's no chance.
What if it's from the point of view of the zombies and then it's very successful because the zombies are winning all the time?
Well,
how hopeful would that be?
Well, it'd be pretty easy script, right?
Right.
Well, actually, what I want to see is if they keep doing it in Georgia, I want to see like Daniel Holden just wander in there because he gets banned, of course, from his town, so he's still in Georgia.
He
so.
Would be a dead man right away. He'd be like, "Is that a zombie? I don't know how to react." And then it was just like him staring at it while it just slowly comes and bites him.
But it'd take like an episode.
Oh, one episode.
Whole episode.
That is
it's like that Austin Powers scene with the bulldozers coming after him. Yeah. No! Forever.
Am I dreaming then?
That was a rectified joke for people who didn't know Rick.
So our next story is Parks and Rec. They're going to get a special guest for their final season, and it's Werner Herzog.
That is
and
the craziest
I just thought
thing,
this is so weird. Read something about it. And here I'm going to try my best Werner accent. He says, "Just 10 days ago, I acted in a tiny cameo part.
That was terrible. It's not... 10 days ago, I was starting in my tiny cameo, and I had a show in an American television program called Parks and Recreation. It seems I sold a decrepit house to a young couple on the program that came from Muncie or someplace like that.
It's going
to
be so awkward and boring.
At one point, a giant bear came.
That's crazy.
I would like to think that the people of Indiana were calm and had good hearts, but they were naive about the animosity of bears.
Does he kind of sound like a mellow version of Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Oh, my God. He's so great. They all think that these are happy Walt Disney animals, but they're terrible animals and they will eat.
He's very dark and depressing and weird and kooky. Right?
Yeah.
Timothy had a good spirit, but he was stupid. He had no idea that this bear did not see him as a friend and a protector.
You know what? I don't think we even need Werner. We just need Johnny to make a cameo. Well, let's move on to our next story. Minority Report. Did we already talk about Minority Report?
No, we didn't.
No, we talked about Greg.
Minority.
Oh, hello. That was a good one.
We spoke of Gregory. Four names, you know.
Well, Greg, you're getting a show on Fox called Minority Report. They're adapting the Spielberg movie.
I love that movie.
And given how successful they were with Almost Human, I think probably
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Like, you already had a Minority Report show, you idiots.
Yeah, exactly. That was a total spinoff of that.
Wow. But that's fine. Whatever. If they want to give it a shot, that's fine.
They're going to pair a... What are those little people called?
Munchkins?
The little people?
They're just called little people.
The Munchkins. Okay, they're going to pair a Munchkin. No, that's not right. Where is it?
Bernd Troyer.
The Precog. They're called Precogs,
guys. They weren't small people. They were just people.
They were regular people who floated in water.
They were crack babies. That's what they were. They were crack babies. A woman, she had a drug problem, and then that's how they got that
Only
stuff.
Only one of them
babies.
Was a crack baby.
She was the strongest one. The one he took.
Crack baby strength.
Crack babies make for strong psychics.
No, but it's like that kind of. That's where they were. That was the whole point of the movie. She's trying to get her back because she cleaned herself up.
If you want your kid to save the world, smoke crack while you're pregnant.
That's
basically,
a good point. Yeah.
And then she can lie in a pool of water and just for nothing.
The more you know.
Anyway, for anyone who doesn't know about the Minority Report, it's about this futuristic society where people can tell your crimes before you've committed them. So people are getting arrested just for thinking about doing crimes. So it kind of gets into these like morality questions about like how you can police someone if they haven't committed a crime.
It was excellent.
All
good,
that stuff.
Good cast with Colin Farrell and Tom Cruise is great in it.
Yeah.
Really good.
And they have these precogs. And there were all these women, I think, in the show.
Samantha Morton was there.
She was the main one. The other two were guys.
Oh, were they? Yeah. Well, this is going to follow a guy that's a precog. He left that life, and he's trying to live a normal life, but he still is haunted by these visions of the future. And he meets a female detective who just may help him find purpose for his gift.
This sounds like
terrible.
A Dead Zone.
Thank you. I was trying to remember that last Anthony Michael Hall show, The Dead Zone. Yes.
That was a roller coaster ride. Great. You had me all excited about a Minority Report show, and then I found out they're doing a shitty version of it.
That
sounds terrible.
That does sound terrible.
I mean, the concept is great. The pre-crime and the three telepaths, and you have a police department that follows up, and you can have the moral question of whether or not they've committed anything, and instead it's a buddy detective
thing
with a psychic.
But it had like I didn't really get their process because it had like the lottery ball thing. And
well, that's because in the future,
such a weird movie.
It was cooler to build it like that than to have like a little typewriter that they could type on.
It also says that they're gonna come across in one of their first cases a spunky kid that's gonna teach them about love and life on the street.
Oh, I'm back in.
Yeah. Right on.
What other tropes can we throw into this?
And there's a cocky dog.
How many more crack babies can we give Josh?
But is there a hooker with a heart of gold?
Yes. A hooker with a heart of gold,
And a conflicted drug dealer who turns out to be a good man.
Now that we're all bummed about that story, let's continue with that role because Legend of Korra, exciting news. They just announced that book 4 is already coming out.
Yeah.
It's going to be called Balance. And it debuts on
October
3rd, which is just in like less than a month. So this is going to be the final season, and it's going to be released entirely online.
Ooh.
Which sucks. And as our resident person who's actually seen Korra, Randy, what are your thoughts here?
I don't understand what's going on with Legend of Korra because Nickelodeon did this really great animated show that tied into Avatar, which was a really big success for them. And the first season came on, and it was really good. And then the second season, apparently there was like a 1 million person audience drop between season 1 and 2.
Whoa.
And it still dropped a little further. So season 2, the ratings went down.
I feel like the marketing sucked down. I haven't seen anything. Yeah.
A lot of the fans were down on season 2. I do think it's a weaker season, but I didn't think it was terrible. But then when season 3 came back on, it took them a while to get to it. They finally put it on. And apparently the ratings were really bad, even though the show was getting better. And halfway through, they pulled it from TV and started doing online only, which is weird because prior to that, a lot of people have been watching it online and they didn't premiere the third book online at all. Like they weren't selling it through iTunes or Amazon. They weren't streaming it on their website. So all the people who had been watching it online were pissed at them. Then halfway through, they decided to placate only the people who had been watching it online and piss off all the people like me who had been paying for cable to watch it. And I'm like, why don't you satisfy both your audiences and maybe you wouldn't have this problem?
Is Dan Harmon like a producer on this or something?
I don't know what's going on. But they have some they're jerking them around. It's clearly not. It's not in line with most of what else they produce. And the ratings aren't good enough. And I think that basically they're just trying to – it's clear they're trying to burn it off. But I'm like, I pay for cable. I want to watch this on my television. I don't want to watch it on my fucking computer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Randy sounded like an old man there. But I totally agree with you with watching. That's why the whole online thing I think is not going to be great.
I don't mind watching online as a thing. It's just that my television is three times bigger.
Right.
Well, I have a TV for a reason.
And but your TV hooks up to the internet, so.
Not easily. And not the same quality as I get with – I mean, if they were to say put it on Amazon Prime or one of those, I'd be fine with that.
Good point.
But I don't want to hook up my computer with HDMI to my TV and watch it on their shitty web player being translated up. I mean, it doesn't – it's not the same quality.
Speaking of online watching,
yes.
This might interest Greg the most of all of us.
Okay.
You know those little hashtags that we always see on TV?
Yeah.
Apparently those – don't do anything. A new study has just come out. Those don't help with any sort of marketing. It says they just did a study and only 18% of people who watch shows actually also follow them on Twitter, which is a lot lower than they would hope.
I've actually stopped tweeting about shows while I'm watching it. Partially, yeah. The only thing I actually do it on, the best thing Twitter is like if you're doing live shows, like the Emmys, Grammys, award shows, or sports.
Or Sharknado.
Or Sharknado. Yeah, something like that. But like, if it's like, say, what, Boardwalk Empire, I was watching the show and I had to like really watch it. And also, like, say, with The Bridge, because it's half of it's subtitled, you got to sit and read it. And if you like take your eyes off for a second, unless you are fluent in Spanish, which I am not, you know, I can't be tweeting. I'd be pausing the show just to tweet. And I think if it's like an opportunist thing, it's cool. But for the most part, and I get into arguments with friends of mine who really believe in social media, and I like social media, and all of us kind of like it. We're all on Facebook,
sure.
We're kind of on Twitter and stuff, and hell, if you're listening to this podcast, you're into social media. But like, as an advertising thing to try to get
engagement.
Yeah. It's gotta be more organic than just, okay, I got to create a hashtag that I want people to follow. I mean, hashtag is so you can follow tweets about the show. So like that's where people like post their tweets on live. Like, okay, well, look at what, you know, look at what J. Edgar Hoover 76 said about our show, you know, like with the fake Twitter line or whatever, or Twitter handle. It's not surprising. I mean, and also because it's oversaturated. When it first started, it was cool. But
it just seems to have like very little gain. And in fact, yeah. What this says is like, it breaks down like overall what the viewing types of people are, and it says 33% of people who watch TV are still the traditional couch potatoes that you think about. They're very focused on TV. They don't like use a phone or text or anything else while they're watching it. 26% they say are OTTers, which means over the top or online TV services.
Right.
Greg, are you down with OTT?
Well, you know me.
So they're less interested in TV, and they'll likely go over a day without watching TV. So they'll just kind of watch it whenever they feel like it, leisurely. Yeah. They don't watch live or anything. 12% are couch chatters, which might be kind of what, Greg, you might consider yourself. You tweet
depending.
And you're kind of engaged, but
depends.
Not necessarily to that show.
No.
You're just kind of online and using a social media while you're doing it.
Yeah.
I can't help but think, now, is that across the board? Like, I think that there are some shows you could consider me a couch chatter, even though I'm not, you know, I'm checking my email and
some
stuff
certainly,
while the
I
show's
think,
on.
Encourage, like, finales for some right. shows.
Finales yeah. or, like, something like...
big events, what's mysteries.
That, what's that Shonda Rhimes show? Oh, come on.
Scandal.
Scandal. That's, like, I think the only reason why they're still on the air is because of all the internet. Because the stars themselves, like Kerry Washington, gets on and tweets with her fans.
Well, you know,
that's kind of cool.
I think Johnny's probably in the same place I am. Is like with some shows, I'm engaged. I watch and I don't do anything else.
Right.
But with some shows, it's like I'm half watching and doing something else at the same time.
Yeah.
My wife asked me about a scene from a couple of episodes ago in Masters of Sex. And I just said, you know, I wasn't even watching. I was just sitting here doing my mail or looking at Facebook.
It's just background noise.
It's just background. Yeah, it's like, oh, I'll look up. but it was a visual moment that was a big deal, and I totally missed it because they were dressed.
Yeah.
Well, see, I think you make a good point, though. It depends on the show. Like shows I really love, like The Bridge or like The Americans, Boardwalk Empire. Mm-hmm. Like, I would do it, like, say, doing True Blood if I was watching it live. I'm like, whatever, you know, I'll not pay attention. But, like, shows like that, I got to really pay attention. So, like, in the past, I used to do it more, but now I'm like, I'd rather watch the show and talk about it later.
Yeah.
But even then, I'm not texting about the show itself.
Yeah, you're just doing something else. Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm milling around. If I had a magazine, I'd be skimming over it.
You know? Yeah. Like the Emmys, I think, the Oscars.
Sure. Fuck the Emmys.
That's funny.
Those are fun ones to kind of.
Fuck the Emmys.
That's Randy's hashtag.
I can't imagine.
To everybody.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, Walter White won it again.
Hashtag fuck the Emmys.
Hey, Randy, we got four guys playing us on TV. We won an Emmy. It's like a reality show. Fuck hashtag the Emmys. Fuck Whoa, wait. Fuck the Emmys. Give it to me now.
Yeah. Oh, I'd take the award.
I think it's the only reason to like watch the Emmys though anymore, because it's so much funnier to see what other people post about it, and then everything that gets retweeted.
That is, I mean, when you watch the live, or when something is weird, that's when you're like, wait, did you just see that on TV? And like 50 million people are like, we saw that was weird, and everybody just start talking about it.
Yeah, well, that's the point of social media. It's the social aspect. Yeah. It's like it's a big wide water cooler discussion in real time.
If you guys have thoughts about this, please go ahead and put it to hashtag the TV Dudes podcast, and you know, we will ignore it just like everyone else in the world ignores hashtags.
Or hashtag fuck the enemies.
Yeah, fuck the enemies.
We'll follow that.
There we go. Just put that in.
All right, let's go ahead and take a break, guys, and we will be back with some discussion of some of the new TV shows that have been coming out.
Is this the summer of 68?
Is it? Yeah. Yes, we're the dirty hippie cult of the iPod generation.
So we're here to talk about some TV shows. In fact, we will give you a little preview of what we're talking about. We're going to discuss Boardwalk Empire, which just returned for its fifth season.
Fifth and final.
We're going to talk about The League, which is back for its fifth season.
And not final season.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about the finale for The Leftovers.
Oh, the Leftovers, is it like a one season or is it going to
be? It's got renewed for a second season.
Okay. Yep, so get your hankies ready.
Okay. We want to give a little bit of a warning real quick before we go into any of these. These will all likely have spoilers. I don't think there's much concern with The League having spoilers, but I could be wrong.
It could be very important spoilers for the story of The League.
Right. Nick Kroll does something stupid.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
But we're also going to have timestamps on the website. So if you go to thetvdudes.com, click on this podcast, you can see the timestamps. You can jump ahead to the ones you want. Otherwise, this whole segment will likely be about 45 minutes. You can just jump to the next music break, and then you'll have our topic section. We're going to start with Boardwalk Empire, and Greg's going to lead us off with that one.
Boardwalk Empire came back. It came back to, I think, just some mixed reviews because everybody kind of agrees that Nucky Thompson, who's played by Steve Buscemi, is kind of like, he's kind of like the piece, but he's not, he's a centerpiece that all these planets kind of orbit around, but he's maybe not the most interesting person.
He's a background character who's made to be a lead.
Right.
Which or he's the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's very weird and very interesting, and it's, sometimes it does waste a decent performance from Steve Buscemi. But like when he was when he's got another strong co-lead or he's got a nemesis, I like him a little bit better than that. they're basically kind of doing an origin story of Nucky as he as Nucky's trying to get out. You know, they keep pulling him back in, but he's trying to get out because
he's trying to go legit.
He's trying to go legit because the story has jumped 7 years to 1931.
And it didn't seem obvious, did it?
No.
And they all look the same age.
They all have the TV watches.
Yeah, there is one key thing about this, and there will be definitely one character who's not coming back, and that's Arnold Rothstein, because he got killed. He got shot in real life. He got shot like 1928.
That's pretty 29. Messed up. I mean, he was such a great character.
Yeah. Right. But that's where the show gets interesting, because you're mixing real life gangsters with like Enoch Thompson, and the real guy from New Jersey was Enoch Johnson.
Yeah.
And you're mixing his story up. And if you're going into like the way history goes, Prohibition ends in 1933. In this episode, what Nucky's trying to do is position himself for that, because everybody knew that the Volstead Act was stupid. And they were also in the Depression.
It was a losing battle. Yeah,
yeah, they were trying to jumpstart the economy as well. So Nucky's basically in Cuba, and this is funny. Why is everybody like always trying to, you know, do stuff in Cuba? You know, it's like, it's interesting.
Mojitos.
Like, the mojitos and stuff. And just, but like everybody's trying to do business down there, because before Castro, it was kind of like a free for all place. So he's down there and they're trying to basically buy the influence of a senator, because
they're
nothing
trying to
ever
get
knows.
In bed with Bacardi as well.
Right, yeah. And Bacardi as well.
They kept saying Bacardi, and Bacardi now is such a marketed term.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I had trouble thinking of him as like a small, potentially influenced by criminals operation. I'm like, Bacardi? This would be like if he was going after Bud Light. Yeah. You know?
I don't think of Europeans, you know, in other export markets drinking a lot of rum.
Yeah.
You know, so, but South America,
sure.
I guess. But
in the U.S.
I also think a lot of South American countries, especially in those days, would have their own distilleries.
Well,
yeah. I mean, that was a long time ago.
But if you also think about, I mean, rum, I mean, that was the whole, that's like spices and rum. That's Christopher Columbus time.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So cheap and easy to make.
But, and then also at that point, it is really hard for us, because maybe our parents know Cuba before Castro. All we think about is like basically something stuck in the 50s with Castro now and his brother running the country. Mm-hmm. But before that, it was like a hot... It was like the east side of Austin. It's like people went to go hang out, party, especially from Miami, because it's only 90 miles away. So he's trying to do all those deals and try to, and he's there. He's back with his new, I guess, what would you call her? A paramour?
Yeah, paramour.
A paramour.
Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette. And they're still running. They're still doing the deals and trying to get things going.
That's notable that they've been together for 7 years.
I mean,
she says, "I'm not going to be alone." At one point.
Yeah.
So, how together are they?
Yeah.
I thought that implied that she's with someone else, but they're just kind of business partners.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you think?
And the character she plays is Sally Wheat. And she was introduced last year.
And I really like her. I like that character. I'm glad that she's still around.
Yeah, me too. I just love her.
Didn't get blown up like every other love interest he's had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. I'm still
boy. That's.
That.
So while Nucky's there, we go back to his childhood. The opening scene is his childhood. He always talked about his father. Him and his brother Eli always talked about.
Oh, when his father was dying, and Eli was like, "Oh, we gotta go take care of
his dad." Right, and he was like, "Fuck dad,
I don't care about him."
Yeah,
and they ended up
burning down the house.
After
it sold to some, or was gonna sell, they were gonna flip it, and
he just burnt it down.
He just burned it down.
But now we're seeing that kind of origin story, that they came from very humble beginnings, and I don't remember them talking about his sister being sick and dying. I don't remember that, but you know, you find out they had a younger, I'm assuming younger sister that was dying.
Here's the thing. I found in watching this that I didn't care at all about young Nucky Thompson and his quest to become old Nucky Thompson. I don't give a shit.
Well, it seems to be like it's doing sort of a Godfather 2.
Yeah.
Kind of look back at the origin story. Yeah.
But Godfather 2 had Robert De Niro.
Well, and it just is so late in the game to do that. That's what got me.
But it's at the same time, I think they're trying to drum up sympathy for Nucky and the predicament that he's in for some reason.
I guess.
I can't really see what predicament he's in. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Just that he decided to become a gangster, but was he kind of a good guy or a guy that just kind of fell into this through bad circumstances?
And this is where the real life Johnson, Enoch, and now...
Johnson.
Yeah, his name is Enoch Johnson and Enoch Thompson, where they mix, because at this point... after the Volstead Amendment is repealed, you know, the real one goes to jail for not paying taxes. Then he gets out, and then he lives his life, and he dies when he's like 85 years old. So if they're going to go pull away from that, I am kind of curious to see if they do something spectacular with him that is totally away from reality.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, he's said in interviews there's a reason they fictionalized him, you know?
Right, so that is where I have to trust HBO. On the other side, then we see some of the other characters. The one I remember vividly is Lucky Luciano. Because they're following his track relatively like history.
And this was the origin of gonorrhea.
Yes.
Among the Italian men.
The blood swapping was so gross.
So
gross.
Yeah. When you watch that, you're thinking, man, bloodborne pathogens, people. Bloodborne pathogens, you know, especially thinking about the nicotine.
I'm not even that technical. I'm just like,
when you think about Ebola now, it's like, why are you doing this?
I'm honestly just watching it and thinking, how important is the symbolism that everybody in the room has to cut their palms open? Well, how important is that symbol to you that you're doing that to yourself? Right.
Well, what do you just like give a, what does the Catholics do with ashes on
Yeah, they do that.
Or like a gentleman's thumbs up or something? That's fine.
Yeah, they could fist bump, chest bump.
They could do like a high five, man. Maybe he invented the high five. Yeah. With the
Italians
blood.
Don't
hey,
high
man.
Five. I'm sorry.
That's
to
why
tell
they
you
call
this,
him blood. Hey, blood.
Italians don't high five.
That's right. They don't.
Sorry. You don't get that part.
What if they could all do a lady? They could all do a Lady and the Tramp thing where they eat the spaghetti up to the middle with each other. I mean, I can't believe we've gotten this far in the review and we haven't talked about Chalky White.
That's what I was trying to go to. I was trying to go to the other planet.
Yeah,
Chalky White has fallen.
Prod him a little bit.
He's fallen on hard times.
Yeah, no kidding.
He is like in prison in a chain gang, just like Sam Cooke used to sing about.
What did he do?
He looks really happy about it, doesn't he?
It's seven years later.
Yeah. No, I mean, it could have been something stupid.
Well,
you know?
It could have been at the club. I mean, his daughter got killed, and he might have been shooting things up. I mean,
he was on the run, and he went back down to the farm. We don't know. I'm sure we will find out what happened.
So, it's probably Narcisse who probably outwitted him somehow. Right.
He's on a chain gang, and it doesn't look good for him. And he's got this one brother who's singing the whole time, and Chalkhead just look in his face. I don't know. Have you guys ever been like kind of working and you're doing something really hard? And it's a pain in the ass, but you're just working. And some guy's like, hey, man, you know, hey, this is okay, isn't it? This is all right if we do this, you know? And so,
yeah, I'm usually that guy.
Yeah.
He is a shucking and jiving suck up guy.
Right.
It's like, hey, I want to be everybody's best friend. Right. You know?
Did anybody think for a while that he was actually doing that, that he was going to be the distraction? Like, I thought maybe it was a plan.
Yeah,
I don't think there was a plan.
I thought he was in cahoots with the
prison
guards.
It wasn't, clearly, but I thought it was going to be a plan.
No, once he tackles him after they make the break?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, I knew he wasn't going to get shot. But my thing is, I thought there was going to be people coming from the outside to bust him out.
Yeah.
Instead of an inside thing. Basically, one black guy went nuts, took a pickaxe to one of the guards, and a couple guys got shot, and they started running. He's the singing guy who I should have his name, and I didn't think he was going to last that long. I thought he was going to be one of the guys that got shot.
Yeah.
So I didn't get his name, but he's the one that tackles Chalky and basically says, can you work a phone? And he's like, yeah, I can work a phone, and you're going to work for me. And they run off to the woods.
How is it that a whole man is in that little box? Now, okay, this is my observation here.
Go ahead.
Whatever Chalky is doing time for, it's not big.
Yeah.
It wasn't some boardwalk stuff.
No, you're right.
It's on a New Jersey chain gang.
Right.
So he won't be in
federal prison.
Yeah.
Right. What? Yeah. I mean, he's not on wanted posters and stuff.
Right.
It's whatever he did. He's probably not even in prison as Chalky White.
That escape sequence, by the way, Boardwalk Empire does great violence.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can definitely see the Scorsese in its DNA because that just when he sees the opportunity, he just points the shotgun at the guard and blows half his face. It was a great little quick violent. The way they do violence is very quick and nasty and just things happen.
Well, that's what I was thinking I would like to say about the scenes in Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we did get back to that. I was so much happier when we were in Cuba than when we were in Nucky's Atlantic City back in 1895 or whatever, because Those shots were beautiful.
Yes, yes, they
Everything
were.
Everything was gorgeous. Yep. The people were dressed really well. So I asked you about Torpedo. That's what it made me think of.
There was a nice yellow filter over everything.
Yeah, everybody's just dressed
because anything
nice.
South of the border, you have to put a yellow filter on it.
No, that's actually what it's like south of the border. It's all yellow.
That's what it's like when you have malaria.
It's all yellow.
I was waiting for the malaria joke.
And,
jaundiced eyes.
They call it the malaria tint.
Oh, boy.
Malariello.
So
and Paul Calderon.
Yes.
I just love Paul
He's
Calderon.
That guy. He's
is
that
the human
guy.
Golem.
He is
just, he was so great.
Who is he?
He's the
he
guy,
the
he,
guy that
he's
cut the
heavy.
Ear off of
he's
the,
basically he's basically the Richard Harrell the Irish guy from season 4 and for season 3 and 4
Daredevil.
Owen Slater.
He is that guy now.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't speak. Yeah,
Daredevil.
Knows how to use a machete, and he likes to have collect ears.
Yeah.
Well, he was, in real life, Paul Calderon was a boxer.
Yes.
And when he kind of came to the end of his boxing career, he got into acting.
But overall, I'm glad to have Boardwalk Empire back and all, but...
A little bit of a lackluster
premiere. I didn't think it was a great opening. Boardwalk Empire always starts slow, always.
Yeah.
It's always the roller coaster. We're on the upslope. It's... Not the most fun part of it. It always pays off, and I know it will. It's 5 seasons in. I trust it. But other than Chalky, I don't know that there was anything. There wasn't a lot in the show that I was like, oh, wow, that was amazing.
Because a lot of the action really happens in Chicago. That's where we go to the Michael Shannons, where we go to
Al
Capone
stuff.
And then we did get Margaret coming in. And
I don't care about
that
Margaret.
That was... You know, I kind of predict. I knew that was going to happen, you know, because that's where a lot of those guys. That she's still working at the stockbroker guy, and they're all bust. Or he shoots.
I love that part though.
Shoots himself in the head.
Scene when he pulled the gun out of his pocket. Everybody, they're all standing there like, "Oh, my boss is talking again."
Yeah,
And I love that he had to wait for the street guy that was out there with the jackhammer.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm about to give my speech and then blow my brains out. And I'm like, this guy out here making all this noise. I get no respect here.
Yeah,
you know?
It was a great scene.
He could have gone to the window and shot that guy instead, you know.
It was a great scene, but I don't care what happens to Margaret at this point. She's sort of out of the loop.
Well, I didn't know that Arnold Rothstein was dead already, you know.
Yeah.
And so when I found that out later, it was why is she even in the show?
Yeah.
So it just seems like they start off with Nucky because it makes sense that this guy's kind of the impetus for the rise of the bootlegging and the mafia crime family. But it feels like it was such a missed opportunity for them to not follow a little bit more of like the Wire formula and, you know, evolve and like it doesn't have to just be this person's story.
Yeah.
Move it. Now make this person the lead. Like they got... Steve Buscemi for a lot of money, I'm sure, and so they want to keep him.
Yeah,
but
maybe Steve just didn't have any other work. I haven't seen him do anything else other than this. Because sometimes you have that other actors get work, so you kind of have to bring other actors up.
I'm sure he was contracted to be like in it the whole time. So.
Yeah, but still, you know, sometimes you go off. You're making some big movie, and then you're in it, but they pull you back a little bit.
And it's not like he's not giving a great performance.
No, he's great. It's just his character's boring.
And in real life, his character was basically a political guy who made friends with people when he had to and passed money and didn't pay his taxes. He wasn't a murderer. They added that in. You know,
why didn't none of these guys pay their taxes?
Wait. This is something my father said. My father was a retired narcotics agent. He always said this: you can do anything in this country, and you could possibly get away with almost anything. The only two things they catch you on is don't lie to the government and pay your taxes.
Right.
That's how they get everybody. You can murder. You can murder somebody and have.
And if the government asks you, you'd be like, yes,
just say
don't
yes.
lie to them.
Don't lie to them. If you lie to them,
I'm gonna lie to the government about my murder thing.
All right.
That's how I should murder someone. That's how Martha Stewart went to jail. She's a felon.
Can I pick them?
I've got a list.
Yeah.
So our overall thoughts on this,
my overall thought is, I don't think Nucky is a boring character, but I think that the flashback. I think that the flashbacks were boring in that I would much rather know what was going on with Eli. I would much rather know what was going on with Michael Shannon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would much rather have had a 3-minute montage of what had gone on in the 7 years up to that time.
Yes.
Has he been in Cuba that whole time?
No.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, has he been back and forth between Cuba and Florida?
That is something that's interesting that when the montage is done terribly, it's really bad. You never want to see it. But when it's done right,
yeah.
It's really helpful. And I don't know. It's like sometimes I think people are afraid to do it, but a montage would have helped.
We got to move on to our next show, yes. Which Randy's going to tell us about The League.
Yes. Okay. So The League is back also for season 5. It is on Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. on FXX. That's right. The FXX does show things besides The Simpsons. It's already been renewed for a 6th season. Pretty much all the episodes are written by Jeff Schaefer and Jackie Marcus Schaefer, who I'm guessing is his wife. I don't know.
The Schaefers?
The Schaefers.
Okay.
With the exception of the 4th episode, last season we had Rafi and Dirty Randy in Los Angeles, which
oh, yeah.
I believe Grant hated and I loved.
I absolutely hated it. It was such a bad episode.
That was written by Jason Mantzoukas, a.k.a. Rafi, and Seth Rogen, a.k.a. Dirty Randy.
And there's another one by
and him? They are writing the 4th episode of this season called When Rafi Met Randy.
Oh, jeez.
You're going to hate it, and I'm going to love it. I can't wait. People seem to say that last season was a bit down. I don't know what you guys thought on last season. If anybody watched, everybody watched.
I have not seen it.
Yeah. I've never been able to get into it consistently.
Yeah.
I enjoy it when I see it.
Yeah.
I enjoy it when I see it, but I never watched it consistently.
Yeah.
Are you caught up? Did you watch this episode?
But, I did watch this episode, okay. And I watched last season. And last season,
did you
it
think
was
it was
okay.
Down?
No, I thought it was okay, but like I said, there was some hit or miss episodes, and I think as this episode is evidence, and some of last season like that, Rafi episode, and what's his name, Dirty Randy,
Rafi and Dirty Randy, my favorite episode of last season. You mean
they seem to be straying toward the absurd?
Yeah, that's like, true. More than the Always Sunny.
Yeah, and, they're kind of like grasping at straws almost in some of those scenes. It seems a little bit desperate.
Yeah,
like. They can't stick to the reality of their conceit.
I think part of the problem is that 5 seasons of a show about guys who play fantasy football might be a little much to ask for dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, I get they're assholes, and you see that It's Always Sunny does it too.
Yeah.
But I find that there's a lot more creativity with what It's Always Sunny does.
I thought this episode back was a pretty strong lead. Yeah. I like there's some changes going on. Jenny winning the Shiva is a big deal, and she's probably one of my favorite characters. And I love her sort of rubbing her husband's nose in the fact that he won the Sacco and she won the Shiva.
She doesn't even do it that much, though. She's kind of like nice about it.
Somewhat.
What are those? Are those like
the winner, the
winner,
loser
and the loser of the fantasy league?
The Sacco is the loser. Shiva's the winner.
I need to do that.
And then they did.
I like that.
Adam Brody played their extended friend who they turns out has AIDS and lives in Los Angeles.
But dies getting
and
hit.
And he dies getting hit by a car.
An AIDS truck, wasn't it?
An AIDS truck. I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
And so they decide to draft at his funeral while sitting Shiva.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They volunteer
ridiculous.
To sit Shiva and draft. And they put beer in his hand and they're high-fiving the corpse. They're drafting. The league is drafting. Like, he died like a couple days before. So they're drafting with him. They're like drafting for him for his corpse.
Wow.
And it is dark, but I found that hilarious.
I thought that was funny. I still feel like the intro was really weak with
Kevin
and the ESPN Dream.
I feel like
where he's doing
anything
the
where they anything where they're bringing in, they love to bring in the guest stars like the pro
do.
Football
they
guys
loved, and they're
and
terrible.
Most of them are terrible, and I honestly I don't know who any of those guys are. It doesn't mean anything to me.
JJ Watts and that
JJ Watts,
Jordan,
Cameron Jordan, and Jordan Cameron. Which
Cameron Jordan.
I kind of like that gag. That basically
that's actually a funny gag.
Ruxin mistakenly
except
drafts,
it was overdone.
Ruxin mistakenly drafts the wrong one, and they bring both guys are at the funeral because. Because they want to do the gag, honestly. There was no reason for them to be there.
Well,
and they had him try to tell which one was which so he could tell which one. He couldn't. He didn't know which one was which.
See, that's
so.
The funny thing about this show. You can mention that, and I already get it because I know
and
the
I
players.
Have no idea.
Yeah.
I got the gag because I'm like, okay, they have two similar names. They're different positions, whatever. But
they harped on it.
But they harped on it and killed it. And anything with the football players is generally weak.
And what's the Stoner brother's name?
Taco.
Taco. His golfing was funny at first, and then it just wasn't. And
and
then him being in the
That I thought was funny. That was a total taco.
Why would
moment.
He be in there for so long? I don't know.
I think he was smoking up.
So
I got the impression he was in there smoking up.
Okay.
Well, I thought it was interesting. Everybody in this episode, like the first episode back, everybody gets a story except for Mark Duplass. He doesn't really do anything.
He kind of drops in the background, but.
And it's unfortunate because I think he's one of the stronger members of the cast.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were to rank funny, I think Nick Kroll and Paul Scheer are sort of the A-list guys. And I love Katie Esselton because I love Jenny and I think she's funny. But I do think that you know, it's all about Ruxin and Andre.
Yeah, and Andre having the Teflandre
is a funny bit, and I think that's going to be fun.
Just
his
the fact
failed,
that
his failed flash mob thing cracked me up.
He's such a punching bag the entire series, and they have him suddenly, like, they can't say anything that insults him, and he always turns it around and makes them feel shitty for it.
Yeah, they really sort of upset the status quo. Like, Jenny having the win... Andre being sort of, you know, Teflandre, and sort of those relationships are different, and that was interesting.
Yeah,
and I agree. It's not as good as it was, but I still find it funny. And I think Taco, by the way, he's the Kramer of this show. He's the weird, out of control guy in the midst of the more normal stuff. And unfortunately, what they've done instead of making him the weird guy on the outside is they've amped everything up to his level.
Yeah, everyone else is getting weird.
Else gets weirder. And I think that's the problem, is that Taco's really funny when he's the only guy doing weird stuff. But when they all just sort of go along with it, it becomes less
funny. When
they're
all golfing with him. Like,
yeah, it becomes less funny when everybody's doing it.
And, okay, so they want to bump their league up from 8 people to 10.
Yes.
So that means they're already going to have 2 slots. And then Adam Brody dies, so they're going to have 3 slots potentially. Yeah. So I already assumed that when they had 2 more slots, they were going to fill that with Dirty Randy and Ralphie.
No, one of them died.
No, they die a year later in the future.
Oh,
that was
okay.
A future episode. Remember?
Oh, that's right. But yeah. No, but he stole his truck. We went back to that.
They stole the truck and then they came back.
Oh,
and then
right.
A year later,
you're
they
right.
Still have that penthouse, and then one of them dies, and it's stupid.
You're right.
Stupid episode.
It was awesome. It was fantastic and hilarious.
Such a dumb episode.
And
anyway.
Grant hates it.
Anyway, so I figured they're going to be in there. I'm interested to see who else they bring in.
Yeah.
But it was an okay one back.
I was pretty happy with it. I'm still really liking the league. It's one that makes me laugh pretty consistently, and I like the different actors.
All right, now let's move on to the one I'm most excited about. The Leftovers had its season finale, its first season. It's got renewed on HBO, so we're going to get a second season. And what's interesting is that this first season actually concludes at the same point as the book that it's based off of. And I didn't know that. I was expecting that this story in the book must go on a lot longer. But Randy, Johnny, you both have seen this. Randy did a full catch-up this over the weekend.
I had 9 episodes on my DVR as of Thursday last week.
Hmm. And what I'm interested in is, like, how does that affect, like, your watching process?
I'm glad. I'm 2 things. I was not sure I was going to watch this show. I was not quite interested enough to watch it. It kept piling up on the DVR.
Mm-hmm. And you had not even watched the first episode.
Yeah.
No, I had not watched anything.
Okay. Right.
And I was mildly curious, but I wasn't sure I was going to... I thought it was entirely possible I was going to delete it unwatched. And then I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll go ahead and try and watch it. And I just kind of powered through it because I wound up not only did I like it, but I feel like watching it in that way, like marathoning through it, I think I'm glad I waited because I feel like I got to keep up with the character threads a lot stronger. And I think I wouldn't have liked it as much if I watched it on a week-to-week basis and had a week between the...
Johnny, I don't know about you, but I had no problem keeping up with character threads for this.
I would not have... Okay, first, I wasn't able to skip it. I would not have been able to...
Have to watch each one live, yeah.
Even when I didn't like it. Yeah. You know, like, to me, the second episode, I did not care for the second episode. I don't remember what happened in it,
but
I know that...
A lot of stepping stones to get things to where we're good for all the rest of the
stuff.
Well,
the funny thing is, that's where I'm going to be with season 2. Like, I know I'm not going to be able to skip this, but I'm glad glad I waited and didn't know, because then I got to power through it on my own terms and enjoy it more. And I think that the week between would not have been a week where I spent time speculating what was happening and all that kind of stuff. It would have been me being really frustrated that I had to wait.
Sure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
and could you see, because we've had our debates in this very room of the different things that we liked and didn't like, I think that we both probably liked it pretty much equally, especially by the end.
Yeah.
But there were elements of it that just, I felt insulted that they spent so much time on.
I think we're a spectrum here. I think Johnny, I liked it a little bit more than you did and a little bit less than Grant did. I would say I'm closer to Grant, and then I really liked it because I was sort of.
I think Johnny's actually a lot closer to me than he lets on. I think you liked the show a lot.
By the time it ended, I think we're probably equal.
You just didn't like the GR.
Spending any time with those people.
You know what's funny? The Guilty Remnant are assholes. That's clear. But I think they're meant to be assholes.
Oh, I know that.
They're the villain. And I think they're an interesting villain.
That didn't make them interesting to me.
I found them very interesting.
But it's a villain that you can understand their motivation without them being like super evil.
No, actually, I couldn't understand their motivation.
I could understand, especially towards the end.
You can't understand that they're grieving through pain and they have a different way with coping of it than you would.
I thought they
decided to be silent about it and that was how they focused it. And initially they were nonviolent.
Do you remember which episode she finally talks?
They were always confrontational.
Confrontational.
Violence. Still being nonviolent. At the end, they were being nonviolent.
Do you remember which episode she finally talks? Was that episode like 5?
Who's she? Patty?
Patty.
Anne Dowd. She talks in the 5th episode, okay. I believe.
It wasn't until the 5th episode had any idea why they were doing what they were doing. I was like, okay, I get it. They dress in white. They don't live these weird lives. Why are they always smoking? What is the point of all this? Why would anyone with any sanity at all join up with this cult? I didn't get it at all.
But psychologically, I understand once they explained it.
I still didn't get why Liv Tyler's character would join in. I'm like, wait a minute.
Because she was robbed of her grief and she didn't know how to cope with it.
Yes, I don't know.
How was she robbed of her grief?
Well, her mom died the day before.
Mother died before that.
That's right.
And so she saw all these other people disappear.
She was just being a dumbass.
See,
that is so selfish. Nobody felt sorry for me. Because they all had shit go down the day after I had shit.
Well, Johnny, I don't think you have to like these people. Like we said, they're the villains.
Yeah.
But I think they're an interesting character.
But they're not human beings to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I had a hard time.
They lose their humanity. I don't have... I can sympathize with villains.
Westboro Baptist Church.
I would happily send the FBI in to kill everybody.
But if they were a character in the show, that'd still be kind of fascinating because you're like, how can someone?
I don't find them fascinating at all.
Westboro
Baptist Church. I just think they're gross.
I just
think they're gross. And if the FBI said somebody just drop a dime,
but everyone else hates them too.
Fine. That makes it okay to hate him. No, you know why?
It's not giving them validation.
You know why, Kevin? You know why the sheriff didn't? You know why the chief didn't send them in?
Because his wife was in.
It's because his wife was. Otherwise, he would have said yes in a heartbeat.
I would. I don't know if he would have, but I think that he didn't regret that everybody got killed at the end.
Spoilers.
I mean, everybody. Everybody was like, "Wow, you were right. They were fucked up.
Yeah,
you know, they were bad guys."
That's the thing. Is like, I think I had trouble. I had trouble working up any sympathy for any of them because you and I know both have this issue of if someone abandons their kids, fuck them, we're done. Yeah. We can't sympathize with them anymore.
I have kids too. I get it though. I'm not with you guys. I'm about to
But your kids
hit the road.
On your hip. Yeah. The chances of you abandoning your child is
I'm
like
out.
You're running and the kid's on you.
Yeah. I already have my bags in the car. It was a pit stop
I know that especially for me and Johnny both. I've seen it in other fiction that it's a thing that you and I, it's like that's a trigger and like I can't handle those characters. I can't sympathize with a mom who abandoned her wife and her husband. Even knowing the issues they had later. What she did, like just abandoning her daughter, I'm like, oh, what a bitch.
Everything that they did was ugly. There wasn't a single thing that they presented. I don't think
you have to agree with them in order to identify with them. And I don't think you have to identify with them to find them to be interesting characters.
Now, that part I don't agree with any of that.
I
agree with you on that. You don't have to identify with them to find them interesting. And I do find them interesting, but I was always – I mean – honestly, when they stoned the woman to death in the woods, I was
like
kind of
right
cheering
on.
At
yeah,
first.
Yeah, me too.
Until
me
it
too.
Got really ugly, and I was like, oh, now I feel bad.
Oh, I didn't. I was
you
like,
should
next.
Feel bad.
I did feel bad, but I started out thinking, yeah, kill her.
I felt bad that I felt so good about it.
So, okay, let me roll back and address the finale here again.
Yes.
Because what's interesting about this, the show has constantly been living for this first season in the shadow of Damon Lindelof's Lost.
Yes.
And people are nonstop in forums comparing it to how he would conclude that show and setting up all these mysteries that are going to go nowhere and people are just going to feel unfulfilled in a way that they felt with Lost. Now, of course, I'm a Lost apologist. I completely agree
There's
with how they
apologize for.
Damn straight.
Yes, there is.
Damn straight, Johnny.
Yes, there is.
Nothing to apologize
Lost
for.
Lost solidarity.
That's right.
Oh, put our boy. Dharma fists up.
That's Listen right.
Make sure those listening know that I agree there's stuff to apologize for.
Yeah.
But
and Randy's wearing all white and smoking.
Right. He
he's just breaking the talking rule.
But I felt like this finale of this first season both beautifully wraps up a lot of the emotional drama and doesn't like force leave you with this big old heavy mystery cliffhanger that Lost was notorious for. I'd say famous for, not necessarily notorious for. And I think that does a great job of separating it as a different entity from the Lost Shadow and still showing that Damon Lindelof knows how to tell a fucking story.
I'm not convinced on that second part. He's done a lot of shit I don't like. But
he's done two things, and you don't like one and a half of them.
I think...
One and a quarter,
if you,
maybe.
If you
how did you like Alien 6?
No.
You didn't Alien like Prometheus? 7?
Prometheus.
I hated Prometheus.
Okay.
And, maybe there was a comic
book you didn't
like. It
wasn't as good as Alien versus Predator, I guess. Because once you get into the Alien 7 or 8, you kind of lose the thread.
Yeah. I think that basically there's a lot of people out there who are going to hate any kind of thread you can pull at. Like, oh, they haven't explained in the first season what happened with the leftovers. He doesn't know, I have any idea. And I'm like... If you go into the show with that mindset that this is going to be like Lost, I'm going to be disappointed.
You're
going to
have a bad time.
You're going to have a bad time. If you hated the ending of Lost, if you felt betrayed, don't watch The Leftovers because you're going to feel betrayed. You're bringing that baggage with you.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed Lost, even if you're kind of like me where you're like, okay, well, they didn't answer all the questions, but emotionally I was satisfied. If you liked Lost a lot, I think you'd love The Leftovers. I think it's a darker show. But I think that it's got a lot in common tone, not tonally, but I don't know what to say. It's not the tone and it's not the plot. It's just it feels like what I liked about Lost. Maybe the character stuff, that the characters are so strong.
It establishes this is the Garvey family story, this show. And you have all of them separated and moving in different directions, and that was the beginning of the show. And how it all culminates, especially because it's heavy coincidence that Garvey runs into Holy Wayne.
I don't think Lindelof believes in coincidence, because Lost was full of it.
Sure.
I thought that was pretty amazing.
But it's such a beautiful scene.
It's a great scene,
because he runs into him, and his whole death scene, that was great. Oh, it was powerful.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like the fact that that guy has been this kind of figurehead who's healing people's pain, mm-hmm. and he didn't fully buy into it himself.
Right.
At the end, he wasn't sure. He questioned it.
Yeah.
And he's like, give me one more chance, make a wish. And we don't get to know what he actually wished, but I think the finale kind of leaves us with a pretty good impression that he wanted things to go back to where they were.
He wanted a family.
He wanted his family back. And in a way, he gets that.
And Wayne said, the look on Wayne's face, I got chills just thinking about it, when he smiles and he says, granted.
Yeah.
That was so great.
Yeah. It had my name in it, which I thought was beautiful.
Well,
but he gets his life with his daughter back. He gets a woman he loves. It's now Nora instead of, his shitty wife.
Thank God for that. I like the actress playing his wife, but I don't like that character.
And
he got, even better, he got her instead of his wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he traded up.
And he gets a non-biological kid to raise again.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of this. And the dog.
Oh, and the dog.
And the dog.
He gets to be right about that, too.
And I love the way he looks at the dog like, oh, shit. What are you going to do?
And that was really cool, too, because, he has this sort of hope, even in his weird delusional fugue state where he goes out of the house at night. He makes some bet about a dollar bet. Was it like a trading places bet?
Yeah.
$1. about being able to actually tame dogs, which I think is a great metaphor for there still being hope in the world after everything is lost. And the fact that the dog comes back to him.
Yeah.
Another great coincidence, but still a beautiful moment.
It was a great story, ultimately a great story, mm-hmm. with a theme of grief.
Yeah.
We're all going to have grief.
And this could have concluded in its first season and been powerful.
So to me, I liken it to Treme in that the big, bad, horrible event pretty much happens before you ever even see the show start.
Yeah.
So you see these people that are 3 years on after a big, horrible event, and they don't know how to build their life back. If one thing that the Guilty Remnant did was they gave the, okay, here the other shoe is going to fall.
Yeah.
They provided the cathartic release.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it for that. They did it to be assholes. And so then they got mowed down on the street.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I've always thought the Guilty Remnant were basically dicks. But I never thought of them as horrible monsters until we saw what they were doing. And especially when we saw Nora's reaction to it, I'm like, oh, you guys are horrible monsters.
No, no, no. But Nora's was like the only positive reaction to it.
Not at first.
Positive.
She screamed.
She lost it.
It absolutely helped her confront something she needed to get over.
Yeah, but
it was a horrible thing to do
to anybody. She had moved. She had moved on.
Maybe
she had moved.
I mean,
on from happiness.
I get it when everyone else is rioting in the streets, and they certainly wanted that reaction. They want people to remember. They want people to not forget about that pain. They want people to actually address it and cope with it.
Yeah,
well,
but
maybe not cope with
any of their fucking business. How anybody else copes?
It's
none of their business.
Exactly.
Except for in their worldview.
It is their business. And I'm saying their world was all fucked up. And I'm glad they burned.
A wise man once said, never rub another man's rhubarb. And those are some rhubarb rubbing motherfuckers.
No, I have zero sympathy for Guilty Remnant. I'm glad they're dead. I hope they burn in hell.
And well, I love when a woman on the street, just when Kevin tries to stop her, and she goes, did you see? She just shoots that guy.
Yeah.
And then she goes, did you see what they did? And then he's like, give me the gun. And she just... you and turns
just
around
goes
and starts
shooting
people again.
It's open season.
I loved it.
The only worry I have is that Liv Tyler's going to be back and the Guilty Remnant's still around in the next season. And I think that's going to happen.
It might. I mean, there's chapters all over the U.S. and this is just one of them. So whether or not they did this elsewhere, I don't think we've seen that or heard that.
I would have thought that the FBI guy would have said something. That's when in the diner when they stopped.
Oh, that
for
shit's
the burger,
going down. Yeah,
yeah, and he was like, "Yeah, get back to Mapleton. You know, hey, get out of Springfield." I would have thought that there was going to be some kind of. Oh, shit's going down in Mapleton.
No, it's like they did that in the morning, and then it took all day until near twilight before like shit really hit the fan. And I think that is actually a little bit more realistic because people wouldn't know how to react initially, and then it would just be this anger that kind of has to build up in little crowds and then conglomerate until it really
and that was
pushes.
I mean, I'm gonna back up your point on Lindelof's writing. Did he write this episode? I don't think he did, but he.
I know it was directed by.
He's in charge, you know.
Yeah.
The writing on this episode, I thought having Matt and is it Kevin Garvey?
Yeah.
Having the two of them out of town so that basically we don't see the pot come to a boil. We just see the boiling.
Yeah.
I thought that was very clever writing and a great way to sort of skip over the boring stuff of everybody slowly gathering the pitchforks and torches. And,
yeah, this was written by Lindelof and Parada. The whole season was,
I thought that was a great narrative trick.
Well, and leading up to it, the burial of Patty and the reading of from the Book of Job, which by the way, isn't that what's tattooed on Pam Hoovy's back on Archer?
Is it? That- No. She's got some crazy quote though.
I thought that was just a beautiful, you know, just his whole
it is such a great passage and
everything about when Matt shows up and he says what are you doing? This is a crime scene. I'm going to close her eyes.
Yeah.
He goes, you asked for me for my help. Well, if you do this, then you're in it.
Bloop. Fuck yeah, man. I'm your bro for life, man.
Right. It's like,
Your back.
Mm. Well, I think that this show does an exploration of – one of the things that Lindelof did on Lost and that I think he does here is that we get an exploration of sort of the issues of faith and things that are not touched upon on TV, unlike, say, Rectify that we talk about all the time.
Yeah, but,
I mean –
and it treats it respectfully.
Well, the notion of God as sort of an angry, mean God. It's like an Old Testament God. I mean, he talks about Job, like a God who would make a bet with the devil and torment one of his worshipers to prove a point is the same kind of God who would randomly pull 2% of the population for no reason that they can discern. It's a very capricious and mean version of God. And I find that really interesting. And yet, they're also showing that sort of religion can be like Father Matt is very much a religious person who's one of the best people on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It also says to the entire population, it's not the same as you thought it was.
Yeah.
Nothing is what you thought it was.
Well, and that's
so the rules are out the window.
Yes.
So if somebody pisses you off bad enough just by being assholes, it's okay to shoot them and burn their house down.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
You know, that was, to me, Like, what did you, I hope you thought this was going to happen for your sake? Because,
yeah,
goddamn, what did you think? What did you think was going to happen? Did you think you
I
were
don't
gonna...
necessarily get that it's okay to? Yeah. But
I think that
I think
when
that happens,
the
and then people have those
changed,
reactions. Mm-hmm.
The laws of any kind of imaginary,
yeah,
God
no, I
are
think
certainly
that's,
up in the air.
I think that's
know?
A really good point from Johnny that I hadn't considered is that. Basically, yeah, when everybody disappears and everything they thought they knew about spirituality and the rapture and whatever else turns out
physics.
Not to be true. And
how about
physics,
just
yeah.
physics?
People
not,
don't
not
disappear.
Even bringing
yeah.
religion into
people
it.
People don't disappear, yeah.
It's they were like, transported by aliens, guys. It's
that,
not that complex.
That all of a sudden
dematerialized.
All of a sudden, all the rules you had about morality, they're like, well, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not going to – maybe nothing happens to me if I just take revenge right. when I feel like taking revenge.
And if you do want to bring religion into it, well – obviously, I wasn't good enough for the rapture, and I'm
so
going to hell
the, yeah,
anyway.
What's the difference? Yeah,
well, go a little bit. Yeah,
well, and I think that it's interesting that there's the bureau, the ATF is the ATF AFTEC. They've added explosives and cults. I love that because the notion is, I think that, I mean, Father Matt's church attendance is so down, and that's partly his church, but also I had this feeling like we're supposed to think that religion became a less powerful force and fractured, and everybody Ooh. Started believing different things. And so there's a big rise of cults. Like this, we've got Magic Wayne, mm-hmm. and we've got, you know, the Guilty Remnant. And I bet we'll see more cults and weird factions in the second season.
Well, and you saw all it took was, you know, the hint. Oh, all it took was Buddy Garrity, a senator,
yeah.
visiting Wayne,
yeah.
and it was like, we got to go take those guys out.
Oh, yeah. And I hope we get to see Buddy Garrity again.
Me too.
I mean, maybe
Especially
he's dead.
He's doing better.
Yeah.
You know, he was so sad.
Yeah, now he's better. Part.
He's getting better.
And I know you guys have already talked about this, but for me, this was on the whole season. But I got to say, episodes 3 and 6.
Yeah.
Those
the
are the
solo
ones,
episodes,
right?
man. The Nora solo episode was my favorite episode of the series, by, yeah. bar none. No comparison. What I wasn't sure about was number 9.
The flashback? Or
the flashback
the,
one.
Oh, I thought that was great. Too.
I started off
really
about
great.
Halfway, about 20 minutes in.
It's just those jogging shorts, man.
About 20 yeah. minutes
oh my
in,
God.
I was the same place I was with the Boardwalk Empire flashbacks. I was like, I don't care where the Garveys were before all this. But by the end of it, I'm like, okay, that was all really useful information, and it was really
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, I was like, man, I hope that wasn't the
no,
case.
No, it took me a little time to realize what they were doing, and once I did, by the way, is that or is that not the perfect affair? She disappears. Maybe a little. Her timing was off. But a beautiful woman, you cheat on your wife in the hotel, and then she just vanishes into thin air.
Vanishes. That's the perfect affair. That's a perfect girlfriend. Perfect.
Kevin needs a shirt that says "The Rapture happened, and all I got were blue balls."
Giant blue balls. Check out these sweatpants. Giant blue balls. Congratulations, Miss Aniston.
So we had a different conversation than I was. Actually planning,
yeah,
because I was going to go into a bunch of my weird shit.
I want to hear Grant's weird shit.
I want to hear where, how much weird shit there is at the end.
Well, yeah. there's not as much. It was okay, so you know, some of the speculation I was reading online was that, like, you know, he made that wish for his family,
right?
Or maybe he wished for his wife to finally speak to him, and Jill does, or she says, or Lori does, she says, Jill! And I like that her voice is all gravelly and fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, she hasn't talked in 3 years.
Yeah, she hasn't done that, and I thought that was kind of interesting. I think going along the same lines of the religious visual tapestry they kind of have.
I gotta go with
coding the show.
I don't think that would have been his wish.
No, to talk to her.
I should wish that bitch had talked to me. I don't think that would have been his wish.
Okay, but they had a very specific and I thought pretty powerful like baptism type scene where he's washing his hands of the blood at the back of Matt's car.
Yeah,
I thought that was really well done. And you know, they throw these things in, and you know they know the religious connotation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're not just, oh, I guess if you want to read into that. No, we're not reading into that. That's what you were doing. So,
well, and this is after the burial and the Job, the reading of Job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love that Matt took it, he, you know, whatever he said to him, however he just came up, and it was like, okay, you know, you called and I came, and we're in it. You mm-hmm. know, like, there was no... You know, but that he would dream that Matt turned him in.
See, yeah,
know?
He had this very
that
vivid
was
dream.
I love that. I thought it was real.
Yeah,
I was totally
betrayed
into it that he'd been betrayed, and that's where they were going. Yeah,
if you stop talking to yourself, they'll let you watch TV.
Yeah.
That was such a great line. Yeah. And
it's in that National Geographic.
Well, yeah,
that's the question, Grant.
Which is haunting him as well.
I'm sure your weird stuff will get at this, but that whole thing, he keeps having this fugue state and these weird dreams, these very vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, are those just dreams, or are the whoever it is that's talking to his dad, whatever angels or whatever they are also talking to him and all that kind of thing?
Whether or not there's a realistic element to it, like there actually is our ghosts, I guess, or anything.
Yeah.
And you know, like Johnny was saying, this once the laws of physics have left, anything's up for grabs. It could be. It could be that he actually does talk to real ghosts in the world. But I think either way, it's just kind of how he's struggling and coping with what's going on, and to an extent he is losing his mind, and maybe there's something genetic that he inherited from his dad. They're both kind of talking to people now.
Something I found today, I had heard, but I didn't look it up before. 2002, after the World Trade Center, after 9/11, antidepressants went up 19%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
So you can imagine how much, you know, I mean, the windowsill was full of bottles of
pills. He was certainly self-medicating.
Yeah, so there was self-medicating. He was. I bet they were. He had a prescription for every one of them.
Yep.
And his father probably did too. And his father was probably a little bit crazy going in. You know.
Have you heard of the condition Foliadu, which is when you have hallucinate. You can have a shared hallucination by more than one person. The do is two people. Oh. Or it can go more folie à trois, or you can have like entire rooms of people have the exact same hallucination.
I had a folie à trois in college.
But
yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah, no.
That threesome didn't actually happen.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I had lots of those in college. Yeah.
There's this movie with
Gang I Do. No, wait.
There's this beautiful movie with Michael Shannon. Maybe you saw it.
Oh.
Take Shelter.
One of my favorite. The movie that made me just fall in love with that guy.
Beautiful movie.
Handsome guy.
But he keeps having these visions of like this impending apocalypse, this giant storm that's coming.
Right.
And in the end of the movie, however you want to interpret it, this is a little bit of a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, but
spoiler alert.
It's an old movie. His wife and his daughter seem to also see it, or at least his wife.
Mm-hmm.
That was.
It's implied that his wife sees it.
That's how you could read it.
Yeah, and so I watched this with a psychologist friend, and he was like, they're sharing the same hallucination. That was his immediate thought, his interpretation.
He was overeducated.
You think the storm actually was coming?
No, what I think the ending of that movie, this
is
a total
deviation.
But to me, the ending of that movie was another one of his dreams, because he had that dream of being in the, because sometimes he would have visions and sometimes he would have dreams. But to me, in the dream,
the beautiful life is that he shares the vision.
Exactly.
Okay.
In the dream, he wasn't crazy. He was seeing it and his wife was seeing it too. He wasn't alone. That was my take. I'm literal.
Yeah. Things like but that. I think that like you often hear like if this guy has a medical condition where he's hallucinating there's bugs on his scalp, if he lives with his wife long enough, she'll also think that there's bugs on his scalp or bugs on her scalp. That's that kind of shared hallucination. So
drink the same bottle of Everclear.
Yeah, so it kind of reminded me of that with Kevin maybe like going through that course as well. But I think for fans that like to get in the mystery of things, I think that there might be more to the National Geographic as well.
I think, okay, you want to hear my take on that?
Yeah.
I think that crazy people remember weird things. The most abstract weird thing will come up. And National Geographics, nobody ever used to throw those away. They were in the house forever.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
and it becomes a symbol of something
so valuable.
More.
Yeah. And National Geographics are worthless.
Yeah.
Because nobody threw away those. So, this magazine of National Geographic stuck in his head, in his father's head, and perhaps he painted a picture in the cabin because he liked that picture that was in the magazine.
Exactly, because that's the same picture.
That's you know, one little
that tribal picture. Yeah,
now, is it weird? Am I the only one who thinks like because of the nature of the sort of supernaturalization of the show? I just assume they're not actually crazy. I assume they're masking with they look crazy with. they actually are like, this is a the National Geographic.
There are angels
something.
And demons in the world.
There are angels. They're talking to his dad.
He's haunted by Patty
like,
now.
I totally assume all of that is quote unquote real.
Is Patty a demon and his dad was
I'm not sure.
Demon, another sort of, word for bitch.
Yeah, I think there's all these dueling ghost kind of things. I always sort of weirdly you in the real world you would lean on the oh well they're crazy, that's the obvious explanation. In this fictional world, I lean the other way. The easiest explanation is that it's some kind of fantastical thing that looks crazy because we're used to viewing it through our realistic lens.
See, my take is that this one amazing, fantastic, horrible thing happened.
Yeah.
Horrible, depending on if you're a leftover or right. if you're a – who knows?
Right.
I mean, it could have been horrible for them too.
They all got took to hell. It's the rapture of hell.
They all disappeared.
Maybe 98% disappeared. And
this is heaven.
And they're all in this weird purgatory.
And yeah. I think that when that reality comes into your world, you are going to doubt your sanity about everything else.
That's true.
So, especially if you are taking all kinds of psychotropic drugs to deal with your depression.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so that's the big takeaway to me is that you start with this horrible grief issue, and then over the years, you're not able to deal with that grief in any logical way, so it just turns into chronic depression.
Yeah.
And if anything, the guilty remnant was able to cause that other shoe to fall.
Yeah.
I don't think that was their intention, though.
I
don't think that they did it as some kind of a suicide mission. I don't think that they
wanted... certainly, because I kind of do. I think that this was their goal, was to be exterminated. They did sort of a martyred thing. They figured... They would cause all this anger.
I agree. I think it was a martyrdom, but I think it was also, I think they feel a righteous quest.
Yes.
To remind everyone else and not let them forget the pain.
And that's why I think they're assholes.
So they're self martyring though.
Yeah,
they're not being made martyrs by.
Because if you follow the Bible, once the rapture happens, it's supposed to be 3 years before there's a, I guess you can call it like a second chance, And what you need to do is make sure you remember what happened and you keep it in your heart and you keep your mind to God during those years and you have that second
chance.
There's
actually 3 years. There's notably 3 years.
I think so.
Because that's got to be intentional.
Because it's about to be 3 years and I think they're predicting like Memorial Day was supposed to be some big thing. And so it's like, they planned this event.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, or it's like 3.5 years. I don't know what it is.
All right.
But so. I think that they were trying to like make sure everyone else has that focus because they in their mind have a noble goal.
Yeah, and that's
and
the thing.
It's really fucked up from their skewed, damaged, and grieving point
of
view.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I hate them is because for them to take that on for themselves is so arrogant and hurtful to other people in the name of. They're
terrorists.
Yeah, they're terrorists. They're absolutely terrorists. Yeah.
You don't have to blow things up to be a terrorist. All you have to do is be disruptive.
Yeah.
And they are terrorists.
Well, one of the things I loved is when Liv Tyler's character is freaking out because Matt has unveiled the truth about her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait a minute. He put a little information on the world and you're beating the shit out of him. You do this to people every day.
Emotionally.
So hypocritical. It's the same thing. It's the same thing they did
well,
to him.
Okay, I think we've talked about this enough. Finale. Well, enough for this show. Great finale. Obviously, it gets us discussing a lot of heavy issues. And I think we're all looking forward to season two.
Are you going to read the book now? That's my big curiosity.
No. I have no interest
in the book. What if they did a graphic novel adaptation?
I've heard from a lot of people that the book is not so good.
I think what I see is a lot of Lindelof's voice in the show.
Yeah.
And without that, I don't think I'm going to be as interested.
See, I heard, without referencing too much outside stuff, I heard an interview with the author a long time ago on Fresh Air.
Okay.
And he sounded very much like it was satirical. Almost.
I've heard that too. That there's more of a sort of black comedy edge to it.
Yeah. That, so
which
that
is interesting. Yeah. I'm like, mildly curious,
but I'm not going to read it looking for clues like I read Bad Twin. Or
that's the only reason anyone read Bad.
Well,
Twin.
Maybe we should. You guys want to go ahead and take a break, and we'll go pull out the book.
I'm going to go read Bad Twin.
We'll be right back.
You ever watch a show that you like, and you don't just like the lead, and you don't just like the plot, but you like the way all of the pieces fit together? All of the supporting characters make sense. There's no Poochie in the crowd. There's not a single Poochie amongst the
There's no plot device characters, you mean?
Right. No plot device characters. Yeah. Nobody that's just...
They're all actually fleshed out, realistic people.
Even the extras have names.
Yeah.
Even if they don't have a speaking part, so to speak, you know, they actually have a name, and so you know that they have a function in that office or whatever.
Sure.
And then, for some reason, around season three of shows like that, they start introducing elements that don't make sense and people that don't... I'm talking about clockwork storytelling. Clockwork storytelling, and I might not be using the proper term, but I'm going to use it anyway.
It's a term you can coin. That's fine.
Okay. Dagnabbit.
And explain to us what clockwork storytelling is.
Okay, the first time I ever ran across this expression was talking about Breaking Bad, everybody's favorite show in the world. And it was that Walter White was the center gear of this universe. Whether everybody else that was in that universe knew it or not, they were gears that were going to rub up against Walter White's central gear as they were wound up and as the clockwork of that time machine moved forward. And I'm beating a metaphor to death here. Their gear was going to touch his, and their gear was going to get stained.
Is anyone else getting kind of horny?
Yeah.
No.
I don't like sitting next to you, actually, Randy. It's a little...
Oh, let's talk about gears rubbing up against each other.
Yeah.
That's a weird kind of fetish I've never heard of.
It's a steampunk fetish.
Obviously.
Steam pluke.
Randy, take your hand off your clock.
That's a grandfather clock.
Hey, so I'm old. What do you want? It's wrinkly.
So do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like Walter White, everybody on, except for a couple of times, like the hitmen cousins, I think they were a plot device. It didn't
actually. I would argue Jesse's girlfriend and the father. Which was a part of the father?
I don't think so.
The father, maybe, but Jesse's girlfriend was definitely a character.
Okay, the father, you know, meeting in the bar.
The father was color, pretty much.
Oh, meeting in the bar, and I just drove me nuts.
He didn't really affect the story.
The plane crash, the whole beginning.
That's true. Yeah,
and the way to the way it was done, because you were trying to figure out what happened from
this turns into how Greg hates Breaking Bad.
I wasn't saying that. I was just saying
how
he's part of it.
That's a good point. That's a guy that, what are the odds, right? I mean, what are the odds of just meeting this one person coming into your life that you're going to be able to cause the death of a whole plane load of people?
And have it land in your pool.
And have it land in your pool, back in your pool with one heart.
Okay, so I guess I'm a little bit confused, because what I thought when you initially pitched this idea about the clockwork storytelling within TV shows, what you were trying to say is that it's an issue with some types of shows that they feel that they have to have the narrative all culminate on the one central character, and all the background characters are just there to help that main character reach this end goal. And so it feels unrealistic because they're all treated flimsily. Are you trying to say that Breaking Bad fits into this or doesn't?
I would say that Breaking Bad has moments of that.
Because I would definitely agree that the ancillary characters to Walter White are very frequently dropped off and then reappear just to facilitate his narrative.
That has always been why, for me, it's never been my favorite show. Or I don't think it's as great as it is because of that. Now, another show that kind of does that a little bit is Rectify. Daniel says it himself. We talked about it in another podcast. Daniel says, I've entered back in his life. Whose life have I actually made better? Those characters in Rectify, they all have their own lives. Daniel comes back in. They still have their own lives, but with Daniel in it, but they're still fleshed out characters. And if Daniel left, they would still be fleshed out characters, I think, unless season three, they do something different with it. But I think that's, for me, is a difference, and that's why, I always go back to The Wire, but because there are characters that are in and out, and they were full characters for the most part. They had issues with the difference
between an ensemble cast narrative and a main protagonist. Because The Wire or Lost or Friday Night Lights, which I'm watching, those are all ensemble casts, and they're specifically developed in order to flesh out all the characters and have that kind of work together. But I think Johnny's arguing is that it's a singular protagonist.
Well, let me ask you this then. Well, how would you feel about comparing that with Dexter's thing to Mad Men? Because it seems to revolve around Don Draper. But
I think that Don Draper, it does revolve around Don Draper, but he is not everybody else's first thing that they think of in the morning.
Gotcha.
You know?
Everybody else
has their own life, and when Don Draper's not in the room, he's not influencing them being their boss or whatever.
Showtime has a lot of these, actually.
Weeds is that kind of show. So is the other one. Oh my God,
Californication,
and so is Homeland. If you think about it, with Carrie, everything wrapped around her.
Well, it's got Carrie and Brody.
There were two, but
you're right. They're totally clockwork.
Right. Yeah, and
Ray Donovan's like that too.
The big flare gun that makes you see it is how every season they have to introduce five or six new characters
that are
all tangential to each other because one of them is going to be the plot device and all the other ones are going to die slowly until the main one gets killed. And what started this discussion was that my wife and I watched all of Dexter, like bumper to bumper, over the last few
weeks. That's awesome. / I'm sorry.
I know. Exactly. It's like, we gotta watch this again tonight.
Once you hit the halfway point, you're sucked in.
Somebody walks on the screen and you go, why is Dexter going to kill that guy? What is he going to say?
Once John Lithgow was gone, it was like, what's the point?
And actually, John Lithgow was the beginning of the problem. If you watch it from the beginning.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Explain.
Nothing at all about Dexter letting him live makes any sense. Besides, let's keep this story going. Because he says, oh, the Trinity Killer, I could learn from this guy. I could learn how to be a balanced guy.
Before it comes back to bite him.
The first time he walks into the guy's house and meets his family, it's like, oh, this guy's fucked up. Instead of just going ahead and killing him, which somehow or another he is able to make that happen on his own terms all the time.
But I thought it made sense in the context because he recognizes this guy is a kindred spirit and he wants to investigate that. And I think they round out John Lithgow's character. They actually give him a bit of a backstory. You kind of realize how this guy is actually much more capable than Dexter of balancing that psychotic part of his life.
Dexter doesn't abuse his loved ones. Dexter doesn't break his son's fingers. Dexter doesn't lock his daughter in the
room. It still became that was what was revealed as it went along. I think it was interesting in the beginning that he wanted to follow him because he was curious about
him. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't have taken... I mean, as given the hair trigger that Dexter has... Okay.
But Dexter's a little... Okay, we're going to start really going into Dexter.
No, okay.
The first season of Dexter is such a surprise if you've watched it out of sequence. Because I think the fourth season was the first season I ever saw. So I was like, I got this show figured out. And my wife says, hey, let's watch this. I've heard it's pretty good. I'm like, hey, you're not going to like it. And then we start watching season one, and I just went, oh, my God, I can't believe how brilliant this show is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Season one of Dexter is great TV.
And season two is actually not that bad.
No, season two is really good.
Is that the one with the relationship with that one woman?
Well, season two is when they... But they find the bodies. So the big picture story works as well.
Yeah.
And it feels like a novel. Mm-hmm. Everything about it feels like, you know, one big story. And then by season three, he's killing people in bathrooms and, you know. he goes to Nebraska. And he can't even go to Nebraska without having to kill some guy with a pitchfork.
It reminded me a bit of The Shield, which would love to just kind of paint people into a corner and then just have them fight their way out.
Except they were better at it.
Except The Shield was great at it. And the S.H.I.E.L.D. did have to take into account how each character's motivations in the background would factor in rather than it just facilitating a plot device. Because it seemed like it was constantly them having to fight against how other characters would react rather than the opposite of, oh, this character just happened to have a good day and decided to do a favor to Vic Mackey, and so Vic Mackey got away with it.
Well, see,
which
the
could
shield,
right, yeah.
easily happen.
The
in
shield,
like
the
that.
Shield is not, I wouldn't say, isn't Clockwork Storytelling because it is a character. It's more of an ensemble, and everybody has their own life. But one that is Justified.
Yeah,
Justified. Is,
it's a weird one. There's the two prong Clockwork because it's not just Raylan. It's Raylan and Boyd. They are the two fully fleshed out characters. Everybody else in that show is a Clockwork.
Yeah.
Regardless of how good the chief is, how good much we like the marshals, they are Clockwork pieces. They are not important to the story. It's always been Raylan.
Well, I don't know. Wait. I don't know if I totally agree with that because they do have ramifications to these characters. I mean, when Duffy, you know, depending on what side he was on.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's get something straight. What? When Duffy was killed in the first season, they killed his ass. And then in the second season, he shows up and says, I survived. They took out 16 inches of my small intestine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was dead.
And he was dead.
And he came back a different guy.
Right.
And he has adapted along the way.
Because he's a very charming actor.
He was but
good.
He was dead. He was another... Yeah. he was another Elmore Leonard guy that bought it.
Actually, in an interesting way... Well, we're always kind of crying for more of Tim and
Rachel.
It's actually it's funny because they're not there because if you think about what real marshals do, they're not going to be in every case. I don't really like. I mean, I want to see more of them. I want to see more of them inside Raylan's orbit, but they're not. I don't know if it's just. You know,
it would be a different show.
It would be a different show.
Okay.
I like it though. I guess. Would you watch a show based on those other characters outside of Raylan?
I probably
outside
would.
Of Raylan.
If it was
okay,
the
Raylan
same
and
quality,
Boyd.
If it was the same quality, I
you
like
know.
This
I mean, it's kind of like it's funny because we're going to see the test of that with Better Off Saul because again, everybody was touched by Walter White. Now you're taking Walter White out of the equation, so we'll see what the thing is with Saul.
Well, another thing that brought this up was the recent there was that splash in the news in our world's news about how David Chase, somebody said, did Tony Soprano die?
Yeah.
And he said, no, he's still alive.
Yeah.
And people went ape shit.
Yeah.
Oh no, the guy in the Members Only Jacket had to kill
him. I thought he said the exact opposite. No, he's dead.
No, he said
no,
he's
alive.
I didn't
he said, why would you ask me that?
Yeah.
He was annoyed, like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
That's over. It's like asking about an old girlfriend or something, you know? But the my point being, everybody expected that show to have an ending, and that was not a one big story show.
Yeah.
Whereas there were plot device characters
in
Breaking Bad, but Breaking Bad was one big story.
Yes.
It had a beginning and it had an end. It had a few different middles, but it had a beginning and it had an end. And it had to have an end, especially with that beginning. Whereas The Sopranos had the first season was the beginning of something, and then the mother died in real life.
Yeah.
And they never really recovered that big picture story after that.
Mm-hmm.
It became... What cousin is going to come out of the woodwork?
Yeah you're right.
What Russian?
And then have to get killed
get
by the end of this season.
Well, let me ask you this. Is Orphan Black that show? Because I think it might be.
Yes.
It's one that the first season we were like, oh, this is amazing.
It's amazing because they're all played by the same woman.
But same thing. The second series, all they did was they kept introducing these weird plot developments, these weird characters. And even though all the characters are her... It definitely does feel like – I think in the third season we're going to see the same thing where there's a bunch of conspiracy twists and it feels the same. It's a Clockwork show in the same way, I think.
Except that it's science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, so science fiction and clones is kind of like
–
it's pretty easy to go, oh, but what about this guy?
Yeah.
Bring him up. It's not unrealistic to think – oh, they cloned men too. Well, why wouldn't they have cloned men too?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and this idea of the television narrative having to have an end is actually more recent, right?
Yeah, I think so.
They didn't used to do this with a lot of the dramas. They would allow shows just kind of go on until people lost interest or wasn't making money.
Yep.
I mean, they cycle in new characters and just keep it running as long as they could.
Yeah. Yep.
Then I think that's where sometimes with these Clockwork stories, I mean, where's the genesis of the story? Is it, you know, from an author, or is it kind of based on a piece of history?
Is it a character? Is it a behavior?
Yeah.
Is it behavior-driven, or is it plot-driven?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times you run out of things for that character to do, so you start introducing other characters just to drive the plot along.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always pan out. Another great example is X-Files.
Yeah.
X-Files never had a big picture plan.
Right.
I mean, maybe they thought they did.
They thought they did.
But they never had a big picture plan that came together.
Yeah.
They've made movies.
And also, to your point about the Clockwork, they took out Mulder, and the show didn't work anymore.
No.
And it went for 2 more years, but it didn't work without Mulder. You had to have him in the show.
Right.
You could have ditched Scully. You could have ditched Scully and replaced her with somebody else. You could have brought in another skeptic. But Mulder was the heart of that show.
That's what they did in Law and Order. Procedural.
Yeah.
Because it was – I mean, that is – because the plot was always – it was a procedural, so you could bring anybody in.
Right.
Jack McCoy was there the whole time, Sam Waterston, but he had so many, you know, assistant DAs. I mean, you judge the show by which assistant DA you liked, you know.
Yeah.
So, but that's how – it really works.
That's how TV,
No, that's how law works, People move on with their careers.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Clockwork storytelling in certain shows. I think it's great because you do get that beginning, that middle, that end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have that one character who drives the focus. But I can understand when sometimes it's inappropriate for a particular show. Like, I also think about I just heard back on my Friday Night Lights fix. I'm rewatching the show, and this is such a brilliant show because, I mean, when we get to the fourth season of this show, they were able to get rid of 60% of the cast.
Because they had to, because they graduated.
They had
to.
But they also had to make some other contract decisions, bring in new people, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They took a bunch of people out and changed the whole story dynamic.
Yeah.
And it survives because at the crux of that show, it's about the town. It's about how people treat each other, and that's what drives it versus the characters. I mean, you still have the main characters, the Mr. and Mrs. Coach.
Right.
Yeah.
But even a part of that, like separate from that, I think that the show works because it doesn't have to have this ultimate ending.
Right.
It doesn't have to end on a certain note that we are all pushing toward. It's just that you want to be immersed in their story for a while.
And I tend, because of my upbringing, my worldview, I tend to like those endings. That's, you know, things. I tend not to like a lot of Clockwork stuff because I just don't. Life is just not like that. And I like this. I like, for me, art in shows or life or songs or whatever kind of just illustrate a piece of your life or illustrate
episodes. You like an episodic approach.
Well, an episodic approach that when it ends, it's just the way life is. And there's, I mean, endings are never neat. They're never tidy. They're always kind of leave a question. And that for me is realistic. And I go back to my mom and dad because my dad was a narcotics agent and nothing is, you know, relatively neat, especially the drug war in the 80s and 90s. It was never neat. My mother was a nurse. She worked in the VA. That was never neat. That was never, you know, there's always things left hanging. And I just think life is like that. So that's why I tend to like the stuff that, or if it's too neatly, or, you know, if it's too neatly tied up, I was like, nobody would do that. You know, that's kind of the way I look at things. So that's where my worldview is. So if I don't like certain things, it's not necessarily because it's bad, it's just because of my worldview.
I don't think it's anything bad at all.
No, it's just my worldview is different. Yeah.
My ultimate point was, if you're going to be, if you're going to start one way, be consistent. Stay that way.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be a show that's about behavior, stay that way. Stay character driven. And follow that character. Don't start introducing stuff, you know, because all it does is cheapen. You forget how good things start when they end badly.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, another
true.
Show that's a real surprise when you think about it is MASH. You know, MASH had change of personnel because that's what happens in the Army.
Yeah, sure.
That's what happens in a war. People die. People come in. People's time is up.
It's the same thing with Cheers is like that, too.
Cheers was somewhat, like that. I mean, initially, there were an awful lot of extras.
That's true.
Cheered for Sam. You know, he was everybody's.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But it was a sitcom too, and it wanted a big ending, and it did the big ending didn't work at all. Mm-hmm. It was one of the dumbest big endings ever.
No, yeah, you're right.
I mean, I think it was like, what was that big buildup for? And it didn't even that was dumber than the Sopranos ending, but. You know. Anyway, my point being, go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, I was just gonna say, I was just gonna wrap up if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Let us know what you guys think in the comments about storytelling, clockwork telling. I believe is that what, clockwork storytelling.
Clockwork storytelling.
There we go.
You have a central character or even a central MacGuffin. You know, a central device that everything rotates around, as opposed to you have a central behavior. That everything rotates around.
Sure.
Or a group with their behavior and their dynamic.
And how those behaviors affect other people, even if they don't realize it.
Right.
It's like a ripple effect of, in waves.
Yeah, I think we could probably wrap things up right about there. This is our adjusted format for our show. We're going to have these three parts, these three acts, I guess, of the new podcast. But we are interested to hear what you guys think, so please let us know in the comments on the site. Please also don't forget to send in your emails to us at mail@thetvdudes.com. And also, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating on iTunes. That really does help us out.
We're free.
We need it. We're desperate.
Also, listen to the end of the music because there is a post-credit sequence where Grant joins the Avengers.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Now I gotta do that. I'm so tired.
But you're one of the good ones.
Oh, no. All right, guys. Until next week.
TV is out. What I want.